Okay, so today we're going deep on a case that's pretty foundational when it comes to Fourth Amendment rights during traffic stops. We're talking about People v. Superior Court of Los Angeles County. It's also known as the Simon case. And, you know, if you're a law student out there, you're probably already familiar with it. But for our listeners who maybe haven't gotten to criminal procedure yet or just need a refresher, this one is a real cornerstone.
It is.
You know, it really gets at that balance between individual privacy and the authority that law enforcement has, especially during something that seems as routine as a traffic stop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what makes it so fascinating is that it really delves into those core protections that the Fourth Amendment offers, that freedom from unreasonable searches and seizures,
Right.
and specifically in the context of traffic stops, which, as we know, are incredibly common.
Right.
And so it really sets that framework for balancing that individual right with the, state's interest in ensuring public safety and law enforcement.
Exactly. So let's start, I guess, kind of with the basics here, right? The case revolves around the Fourth Amendment, obviously, and how it applies to those traffic stops and any searches that happen when somebody is arrested for a traffic violation. It's significant because it really kind of sets some limits on what officers can do during those encounters, and it constantly highlights that tension that exists between an individual's right to privacy and the need for law enforcement to be able to do their job effectively.
Yeah, and I think it's helpful to sort of think about this in the broader context of, legal precedent in general. Cases like Simon are really where those abstract principles of the Fourth Amendment actually take on concrete meaning. They're not just, theoretical constructs, right? They establish these specific rules that both law enforcement officers have to follow and that courts use to evaluate whether a particular search or seizure was legal or not in a real-world situation.
Exactly. So I think it would be helpful to kind of set the stage here. You know, paint a picture for our listeners about what actually happened that led to this landmark ruling. So we're going back in time to March 9th, 1970. It's about 7:30 in the evening, and Officer Erickson pulls over Gary Steven Simon. And the reason for the stop is pretty straightforward. Simon was driving without any headlights or taillights on, clearly a violation of the vehicle code.
Yeah, and something that, again, lots of drivers unfortunately might overlook from time to time. But as this case unfolds, we see how even a seemingly simple violation like that can really lead to some really significant legal questions.
Absolutely.
The really crucial part of the story, of course, is what happens after that initial traffic stop.
Right. So Officer Erickson asks Simon for his driver's license and registration, but Simon's unable to produce either one. And to make matters more complicated, the officer also sees Simon kind of moving around in the car and doing something under the dashboard that he thinks is suspicious. So because Simon couldn't show any ID or registration, Officer Erickson decides to arrest him for that initial traffic violation, citing California Vehicle Code Section 40302, which deals with that kind of offense.
Yeah, and this is actually a key point to understand, under California law at the time, and it's still true in a lot of places. Even a minor traffic violation, like not having your headlights on, can technically be grounds for an arrest. But the Simon case is so important because it really clarifies that just because an officer has the technical authority to arrest someone for a minor infraction like that doesn't automatically give them unlimited authority to search that person. So it's about drawing those lines.
Absolutely. Okay, so now Simon's under arrest and Officer Erickson searches him. And during the search, the officer finds a plastic bag with 7.6 grams of marijuana. It was in Simon's right front pants pocket.
So that obviously kind of ups the stakes here for Mr. Simon.
For sure.
He ends up getting charged with possession of marijuana, and this is where the legal challenge really begins because Simon's lawyers argue that that evidence that marijuana shouldn't be allowed in court because it was obtained through what they claim was an unlawful search, a violation of his Fourth Amendment rights.
And the trial court actually agreed with Simon.
They did.
They granted his motion to suppress that evidence. But then the prosecution, the people of the state of California, appealed that ruling and it went up to the California Supreme Court. So now the Supreme Court has this central legal question that they have to grapple with. Was this warrantless search of Simon okay legally as a search incident to arrest? Even though the arrest itself was just for a relatively minor traffic violation. That's the core issue at the heart of the Simon case.
And it really forces us to consider, that exception to the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement.
Yeah.
We have this idea of searches incident to a lawful arrest.
Right.
And so the question is, does that exception apply here? Does the mere fact that someone was lawfully arrested, even for a minor offense, automatically justify a full search?
Right. And the California Supreme Court's answer was a resounding no.
They did.
They said the search in this case was not legally justified.
Mm-hmm.
And this ruling ended up establishing a super important principle in Fourth Amendment law, especially in the context of traffic stops.
Right.
The court said for a search incident to a traffic arrest to be lawful, the officer has to have specific articulable facts.
Mm-hmm.
That would lead a reasonable officer to think that the person they stopped was armed and dangerous.
And that phrase, specific and articulable facts, is really key here.
Yeah.
It's highlighting that it can't just be a hunch.
Right.
Or just some sort of generalized suspicion. The officer needs to be able to point to concrete observations or concrete information that led them to reasonably believe that the person might be armed and dangerous.
Exactly. And the court actually went further than that.
They did.
They said that searches for evidence like the marijuana in this case.
Right.
If that evidence is not related to the traffic violation that the person was arrested for, then those searches are considered unreasonable unless there is independent probable cause to believe that evidence is there.
Right. So just because Simon was arrested for a traffic violation related to his lights, that didn't automatically give the officer the authority to search him for drugs?
Exactly.
There had to be some sort of connection between the justification for the search and the reason for the arrest.
Yeah.
Unless, as you said, there was a separate independent probable cause to believe that some other crime was being committed.
Mm-hmm. So let's dig into the court's reasoning a little bit.
Okay.
Especially the majority opinion that was written by Justice Mosk.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things the court did was it made this really important distinction between typical traffic stops and full custodial arrests.
Okay.
So, those more serious offenses that lead to someone being taken into custody.
Hmm.
They said routine traffic stops are more like these brief investigatory detentions.
Right.
Think about your own experience. You get pulled over for speeding or something.
Right.
You show your license and registration. Yeah. Maybe you get a ticket and then you go on your way.
Yeah.
It's very different from being arrested for a felony and being taken to jail.
Absolutely. And that distinction is so important for understanding this ruling.
Yeah.
Because, traditionally, the justification for a broader search incident to arrest, if you're talking about a serious crime,
mm-hmm.
it's all about officer safety.
Yeah.
Making sure they can disarm the suspect and, making sure that evidence related to that crime isn't destroyed.
Right.
But the court in Simon recognized that you can't just apply that same rationale to a minor traffic stop.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't fit the nature of that encounter.
Exactly. And they specifically said that the scope of a search incident to an arrest.
Mm-hmm.
is limited to those very specific purposes.
Right.
Protecting the officer's safety.
Right.
Preventing the person from escaping.
Right.
And discovering evidence that's directly connected to the crime that led to the arrest.
Right.
So in Simon's case, that marijuana in his pocket had nothing to do with why he was arrested.
Exactly.
Driving without lights and not being able to show his ID or registration.
Yeah, that lack of a causal link is critical.
Mm-hmm.
The justification for that search has to make sense in light of the offense.
Right.
Driving without headlights doesn't automatically suggest that you're carrying weapons or illegal drugs.
Exactly. And the court also pointed out that there wasn't anything else in Simon's case
mm-hmm.
that would have given the officer a reason to think that Simon was armed or dangerous.
Right.
There weren't any other movements beyond what he did under the dashboard.
Right.
No visible bulges in his clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that would have really indicated danger.
So that brings us to the prosecution's sort of alternative argument.
Yeah.
Which they raised later in the legal proceedings.
Right.
And that was that the search was actually justified because they had probable cause to suspect auto theft.
Mm-hmm.
They pointed to the fact that Simon couldn't produce registration for the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And, those movements he was making under the dashboard.
Right.
Suggesting that maybe he had stolen the car.
Right. So they're trying to argue that there was a separate probable cause for a different crime
mm-hmm.
that would have justified the search.
Right. And the California Supreme Court ultimately didn't buy it.
They didn't.
They acknowledged that those facts, in theory, could raise some suspicion of auto theft.
Right.
But they said, you can't bring that argument up now.
Yeah.
It's too late in the process.
You know, it said it was procedurally forfeited.
Yeah.
The prosecution should have made that argument back in the trial court.
Exactly. And this is, I think, a really valuable lesson for law students in particular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the legal system works according to specific rules and procedures. And it's super important to raise your legal arguments at the right time.
Yeah.
If you don't, you might lose the chance to have those arguments even considered.
Absolutely. So now I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about Chief Justice Wright's concurring opinion in this case.
Okay.
He agreed with the majority that the evidence should be suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
So he sided with Simon in the end, but he got there a little bit differently.
Okay.
He was really focused on the safety of law enforcement officers.
Right. So he was concerned about the potential dangers that officers face when they have to transport someone they've arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just for a minor traffic violation.
Right. So he's thinking about that moment when the officer and the person who's been arrested are in the police car together.
Exactly. In close proximity in a confined space.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's always that potential for something to go wrong.
Right. And specifically, Chief Justice Wright said he thinks officers should be able to pat someone down for weapons before they put them in the car.
Right. As a precautionary measure.
Mm-hmm. Just to make sure everyone stays safe.
Exactly. But even with that emphasis on officer safety.
Yeah.
He still agreed that a full-blown search, like the one that happened in Simon's case,
right,
went too far.
Yeah.
He said a soft object, like that bag of marijuana, wouldn't reasonably be mistaken for a weapon during a pat-down.
Right. So even the justice who was most concerned about officer safety still thought the search in this case was excessive based on what the officer knew at the time.
Exactly. And this leads to what's become known as the Simon test.
Right.
Which is that standard for determining whether a search incident to a traffic arrest is constitutional.
Yeah. And it all goes back to those specific articulable facts.
Right. The officer has to be able to articulate specific facts that gave them a reasonable belief that the person was armed and posed a danger.
And again, it's not enough for the officer to just have a bad feeling.
Right. It has to be based on something concrete, yeah, something observable.
Right. Something they can point to and say, this is why I thought this person might have a weapon. And the Simon test also emphasizes that if the officer wants to search for evidence,
mm-hmm,
not just weapons, then they need a separate probable cause.
Right.
That's specifically tied to the crime the person was arrested for.
Exactly.
So in a typical traffic stop situation, that can be really hard to establish.
It can. And, you know, for those of you listening who are going to be future lawyers, this is the key takeaway from People v. Simon.
Mm-hmm.
A traffic stop, even if it technically counts as an arrest under the law,
yeah,
doesn't automatically give the police the right to search you.
All right.
The Fourth Amendment requires a much more focused and justifiable reason for them to intrude on your privacy like that.
Right.
And if they're concerned about their safety, it has to be based on concrete facts that suggest you might have a weapon, not just a hunch.
Exactly. And it's also important to keep in mind how the law defines arrest in different situations.
Yeah, we talked earlier about how in California, at the time of this case, even a minor traffic violation could be considered an arrest.
Mm.
And that's still true in a lot of places.
Right.
But the Simon case makes it clear that just because something is technically an arrest,
yeah,
doesn't mean the police have unlimited power to search.
Exactly. The Constitution still protects you.
Absolutely. And the other thing that Simon highlights is how important it is to follow those procedural rules in court.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecution in this case waited too long to bring up their argument about auto theft.
Right.
And that ended up hurting them.
Yeah, even if they had a good argument.
Mm-hmm.
The timing was wrong.
Exactly. And I think the Simon decision really shows us how the courts try to balance things.
Yeah.
They want to protect people's privacy rights under the Fourth Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have to think about the safety of police officers who are out there enforcing the law.
Right.
And in Simon, the court basically said that, generally speaking, we need to focus on individualized suspicion,
yeah,
before we let the police conduct a search.
Mm-hmm. Not just give them broad discretion to do whatever they want.
Exactly. And there are a couple of quotes from the Simon case that I think really sum this up. Justice Mosk, in the majority opinion, said the critical factor is not the likelihood of the person being armed, but the increased danger to the officer if the person is armed.
Right. So they're really focusing on that specific threat.
Exactly. And then when it comes to searching for evidence, the court laid down this really clear rule.
Mm-hmm.
They said searches for evidence unrelated to the traffic offense are unreasonable without probable cause.
Right. So again, that connection has to be there.
It does.
Okay. So what does all of this mean for you as a future lawyer?
Good question.
People v. Simon is like a textbook example of how the Fourth Amendment limits government power, even in something as seemingly minor as a traffic stop.
Right.
So remember the Simon test.
Yeah.
Specificity is key.
Mm-hmm.
Hunches aren't enough.
Right.
The police need concrete facts to justify a search.
And those facts have to relate to officer safety.
Exactly. And as you're studying and eventually practicing law, keep thinking about how this ruling applies in different situations.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of facts would really justify a search under Simon?
Yeah, it's a great question to keep in mind.
Yeah, this is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to Fourth Amendment law.
It is.
And we encourage you to dig deeper into the cases that have come after Simon and see how those principles have evolved.
Yeah, and I think one thing that's particularly interesting to consider is how the Simon test has been interpreted and applied by courts in the, you know, decades since this decision.
Right.
You know, what kinds of factual situations have courts said meet that specific and articulable facts standard?
Mm-hmm.
And what situations haven't met that standard?
Right. So look at those later cases and think about how they've used Simon to decide these really important Fourth Amendment issues.
Exactly.
It's a fascinating area of law, and there's always more to learn.